Like, we have something going here. We're building something special, and, you know, you can see it from the outside, and inside, it's even more beautiful.
The point of having a bunch of Ferraris and keep them in the garage, you know, like, take them out to the track, so.
Once a Giant, always a Giant. For me, it's only a Giant.
Welcome, everybody, to a special edition of All In with Art Stapleton, a New York Giants podcast brought to you by NorthJersey.com and The Record. I am your host, Art Stapleton, and we are in Indianapolis. Day two for me here at the Scouting Combine. We got things going today with Joe Shane and the rest of the NFL executives. So we'll have takeaways from Joe Shane's press conference, both on the podium and off the podium with the beat. So you'll have all that. I'll try to share that with you later in the show. But first up, I was also on Radio Row today. Thanks to the Giants for allowing us to use their setup when they were done. John Schmelken crew, really appreciate it. I'll be on with John on Wednesday, so you can check me out over there on Giants.com. We met with Dane Brugler, the creator of the Beast Draft Guide for The Athletic. Dane is one of the best in the business. We've had Jordan Reed on from ESPN. He, to me, is one of the best. And now we've got Dane on. We're going to talk the draft, talk the top of the draft specifically, what the Giants should expect at six. Dane's going to go in depth on the quarterbacks, on the wide receivers. We'll talk a little what would you do if the Giants gave you the power to make the pick at six. So I think you're going to love everything from Dane. So we go from Dane, and then I'll give you my takeaways on Shane. So first up, from my lovely hotel room here in Indianapolis, we go to earlier today over at the convention center where Wi-Fi was a little spotty. So hopefully you can bear with us. But our producer extraordinaire, Paul Wood, is doing a great job putting the show together. And hopefully you enjoy the interview with Dane Brugler. Everybody's been clamoring for this guy. I like to call him the Beast, but his draft guide is the Beast. Dane Brugler of The Athletic. Dane, thanks for giving me a couple minutes.
No, of course. This is a fun week, so plenty to talk about. Especially, it's always fun when the Giants have an early pick in the first round. Makes things a little more interesting. So that's certainly the case this year. A lot of intrigue about what they might do. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun offseason to be a Giants fan.
So let's obviously go from the top down. And like I said, I know you're probably working on the Beast. When is your Beast coming out at some point?
The goal is always the first week in April. You know, I've got about a month left to put the finishing touches on it. I want to get all the pro day information in there, and that's through the month of March. So that's all important stuff. You know, there's a lot of steps we still have to get before we get there. But yeah, 400 prospect profiles in there, thousands of rankings, all the pro day and testing information. If you're a fan of the NFL draft, this is something that is a must have.
It's not even a question. Whenever it comes in the last couple of years, I've, you know, downloaded it, put the link on my desktop. It's, you know, priceless information. So let's talk top six, Giants sitting at six. I know there's been a lot of debate over trades. We can get to that idea. But the way I see it is that if they're looking for a quarterback or a wide receiver, is it as simple as looking at it saying, you know, well, you're at six, you either get one of your top three quarterbacks or one of the top three receivers?
Right.
Is that how you see the top six playing out?
I think we're going to see – I'll be surprised if we don't see a trade. I really will be. I think that we'll see some type of trade, whether that's a three in the Patriots, a team moving up to get one of those quarterbacks, or a team that really wants one of these receivers, you know, at five with the Chargers. We can see them bail. You know, we know they want more draft picks. New era with Jim Harbaugh. They want not necessarily the fifth best player in the draft. They would rather get, I think, quantity in terms of total draft picks. So I think we'll see some type of trade, and that'll really shake things up. But there's a good bet quarterbacks are going 1, 2, 3. And then wide receiver at 4. 5 will be a little bit of wild card. And then the Giants are sitting there if they stay put. Now, if they fall in with one of these quarterbacks, you have to at least examine the opportunity to go up and get them. But let's just say they stay put at 6. Good bet one of those receivers is going to be there, and that could very well be the direction they go.
Now let's talk quarterbacks, because that's what everybody wants to do. I know you're still evaluating and putting together your rankings and stuff, but when you look at it, I would assume you have Caleb Williams at one. How do you break down these quarterbacks, and do you look at them in tiers? Are the 2 and 3 closer to Caleb than maybe some people might think? Where you stand on the quarterbacks right now, knowing that, look, you reserve the right to change your mind and your rankings the way things come out?
For the most part, all the hay's in the barn. You know what? I don't think anything big is going to happen that's going to alter how you view these players. But when it comes to the quarterbacks, I do have Caleb Williams at one. I think that no quarterback over the last 3 years has more touchdowns than Caleb Williams does. Nobody has more wow plays the last 3 years than Caleb Williams does. You know, his balance in the pocket, his ability to beat the defense in different ways. Sometimes he'll put the superhero cape on and that'll lead to some mistakes. But for the most part, the poise, the athletic instincts, the whole package that he brings, that's why he's going to be the number one pick. That's why you look at the Bears and their whole situation. It'll be a shock if he's not picked to the Bears at one. The intrigue will start at two with the Commanders and which direction they go. I'm a big Drake May fan. I would give him the edge over Jaden Daniels at this point. Drake May, he kind of fell in the same trap where he felt like he had to put the superhero cape on and do some things that led to reckless decisions. But he's a young player who, over the last 2 years, nobody has more yards of total offense than he does. He is a really good scrambler. He can beat you with his arm. He's really good from the pocket, but he also can create with his legs, both as a scrambler and then creating the second chance plays. So, you know, I think when you talk about Drake May at two, that's, I think he's kind of the favorite. And then Jaden Daniels, I would put him at three. What he did this past year was nothing short of remarkable. 90 plays of 20 plus yards. That's the most ever we've seen in one FBS season. But there's still some processing thing that, you know, he's working out. A little bit leaner than you want. And with the way he runs, you kind of worry about durability and him holding up. But he brings such a jolt of energy to your offense that I think teams will be able to overlook some of those areas of concern, and they'll be happy to take him, whether it's the Patriots or the Falcons trading up to three, the Raiders trading up to three. One of those teams is going to think that Jaden Daniels is the guy at number three.
So I want to ask you what's become the million-dollar question. It's, for me, starting to watch guys, the J.J. McCarthy question, and it's coming up. It seems like, you know, whether there's buzz or there's negativity surrounding McCarthy and where he's at, how do you view McCarthy as a prospect? And do you believe or buy in that teams are actually, you know, falling in love with his traits even beyond what he's done, you know, production-wise, which, you know, is just lead a team to a national championship?
You know, I think first off, I think, you know, we need to – fans need to know that this isn't like a rising situation. I mean, in August, he was, I think, 15th overall in my top 50. I mean, J.J. McCarthy's been a guy that teams have been buzzing about since the summer and what he could be. And when you talk to teams, the first words out of their mouth when you talk about J.J. McCarthy is he's a winner. And I know fans roll their eyes about this, but high school, you're 36-2, state championship. In college, 27-1 at Michigan with a national championship. I understand that, you know, there's a lot of context needed when you use win-loss record with quarterbacks, but teams care. So, you know what? It's a relevant stat, and that matters to a lot of teams. And we factor him as a passer. He's a very loose passer. He works well on the move. He's tough. He's smart. He's accurate, especially in the short to intermediate game. It's just he played in an offense that was built to run the football. And, I mean, I don't think that speaks to the lack of trust in J.J. McCarthy, just how they built that offense. And you know what? They won a national title. It worked. So I don't think that I would not be deterred by how the Michigan chose to run their offense. Now, do I wish his body of work was more expansive? Absolutely. Yeah. That's the big question. He has 750 dropbacks. You know, it's just you want more than that to invest in a quarterback top 10. But I think he's going to crush it this week. Because the interviews, the intangible factor, that's going to really set teams, it's going to be easy to let them fall in love with J.J. McCarthy. And so and he's going to go somewhere top 12. I really believe that. It's just a matter of, you know, would he go 18 to the Falcons? Does he go 11 to the Vikings, 12 to Broncos? And where do the team feel like he's ready to contribute right away? Or is he a guy that's going to have to sit? And that's going to maybe alter if you're comfortable drafting that early. So the JJ McCarthy conversation is really fascinating. And yeah, the Giants are sitting there at six. You know, we know they drafted a quarterback at six a couple years ago with some of these questions. And
Giants fans don't want to hear
I forget I mentioned it, but you know, I think that it's tough because you know you do have the Daniel Jones in the contract looming over all this. You have to do what's right for the quarterback situation. If you're the Giants, you have to do what is best long term for the position. But if you have a chance to get a true X receiver and maybe just, you know, we'll be fine with Jones for another year, and we kind of reset, look at the quarterback market looks like next year, that might be the most likely scenario we're looking at for the Giants.
Well, you mentioned McCarthy, and that all I keep hearing is Daniel Jones is the expected starter in week one, So if the Giants like what McCarthy brings to the table, is six too rich to bring a guy in and then have him sit behind Jones and then just see how things play out this year? And then next year is the year where if Jones plays well, you can trade him. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't play well, you're out of the contract, $22 million in dead money, and now it's the McCarthy show. Is that a feasible scenario, or if they're going to take McCarthy, they probably should move back a little bit? How do you see that?
No, if you want JJ McCarthy, you take him at six. I mean, if you like him enough to draft him, if you believe he's that type of player and has that type of future – you don't play around. You don't get cute. You take him at six. That's your pick. And, you know, because I do think he's going top 12, like I said. And if you don't take him at six, we could see a team like the Raiders or the Broncos trade up to seven or eight and take him. So, you know, but if you're kind of on the fence about him anyways, then you shouldn't be drafting at six. You know, if you're on the fence, sure, if you're not truly in love with him as, okay, this is the guy, he's going to be the one that leads us to division titles and helps us to the playoffs and all that. I mean, I really believe that the goal when you draft a quarterback top 10 should not be to find the next Patrick Mahomes. It's just not realistic. Your goal should be to find a quarterback that can be a top 10 to 12 quarterback in the league. I mean, like your Eli Manning, a top 10 to 12 quarterback in the league. Because once you get in the tournament, once you get in the playoffs, you just need to win one game at a time until you get to the Super Bowl. So if you could find a quarterback that's a top 10 quarterback in the league, that's the goal. And if they believe JJ McCarthy's the guy, then you pull the trigger at six. If you're not convinced, then you go with receiver.
You know the Dable Kafka offense and what it's looked like to this point. Now, who knows what it looks like in 2025, mm-hmm. but you know, when I look at players, you know, you say, oh, they're all talented. All these quarterbacks can fit in that system. But it seems like people lean towards Drake May and maybe McCarthy to a lesser extent and say, oh, that would be the guy that, you know, Dable can kind of form. Now, I think some of that is probably because people just see Daniel Jones.
Right, yeah, right.
You know, the idea. But for you, you know that system. Mm-hmm. You know what Dable wants to do if, you know, the blueprint is what he did in Buffalo. Is May that guy, or is it one of the other guys?
I think that no matter who, if they did draft a quarterback, no matter who it is, they're gonna tweak it a little bit to fit that quarterback, because all these guys are a little bit different with what they were asked to do in college. What are the specific strengths of their game? You know, a guy like JJ McCarthy is really comfortable working over the middle of the field. Where some of these quarterbacks, they weren't asked to do that consistently. You know, they worked on the perimeter. And it's not that they can't do it. It's just that's where they're most comfortable because that's the college offense they played in. And I think that's a key thing here. A lot of these college offenses, they're just not equipping these guys to be NFL ready because it's not their job. Their job is to win football games in college, not necessarily develop them so they're ready for an NFL offense. So no matter which quarterback we're talking about, I do think it's going to take a little bit of, you know, creativity from the play calling standpoint to make sure they're comfortable. And, you know, Sean Payton, he talks about this, how I don't want my quarterback to feel like he has to jump off the high dive. I want them in the 3-foot section. Now, there are probably a handful of times throughout a game where he's going to have to jump off the high dive, but I don't want it to have to be 20 times a game. I want him in the 3-foot section of the pool, let him where he's comfortable, and then, you know, when it does come time for him to make a play, he's going to be ready to do it.
So that's the quarterback stuff, and obviously I told you guys, if there's a guy to get, it's Dane here. I want to thank John Schmelk and the Giants for letting us use their set here. So appreciate them for letting us do it. It's always a little crazy scenario at the combine trying to find a spot to do these things. So that's the quarterbacks. Let's go to the receivers a little bit, because you obviously mentioned, you know, I look at it and look, in this league, when you look at positional value and the price tags and everybody, if you can get a receiver who's a top five guy in the league on a rookie contract, it's huge. Right. I mean, you know, the Jamar Chases of the world, there's a reason why that move worked. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it didn't work 10 years ago, but it works now. Marvin Harrison sitting there, I think nobody expected him to be gone beyond three. Yeah. But if the quarterbacks do go 1, 2, 3, I would imagine he's off to four to Arizona. Right. You know, one thing about Harrison, and I'm sure a guy who digs into tape all year like you do, and is not just the guy like me who in February starts focusing on the draft. Do you like the idea that Marvin basically says, I'll come and interview you guys, I'll go to the, you know, I'll go to all your medical checkups, but I'm preparing for the football season. It's about football for me. It's not about running around in shorts in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I mean, I respect it because he knows he can do that. And worst case scenario, he goes, what, 4, 5? I mean, he's not falling out of the top five. So I don't think, you know, he's paying attention to things that matter, and I applaud him for it because he has the power to do that. Do I wish there'd be 100% participation at the combine? Sure, that'd be great. You know, we have data for every one of these players when you do that, whether 40-yard dash, 3-cone, all that stuff. It'd be great, but it's also not realistic. I mean, you go back 30 years ago, there are a lot of guys not participating in the combine. His dad didn't participate in the combine. You know, like this is not an uncommon thing that is specific just to Marvin Harrison Jr. He just knows he has the power to do it. And yeah, I mean, I was in Columbus for the Maryland game and on the sidelines watching that. And honestly, it wasn't playing their best game. And then they started targeting Marvin Harrison Jr. And it was just like, all right, yeah, it's over.
Good night.
Yeah, that's all he needed to do. He's not only a physical freak. I mean, he's not running because he can't, or he's going to run a slow time. I mean, he is a legit 4.4 athlete. I really wanted to see a short shuttle and 3-cone because I think he would have blown it out of the water. But more so than just the size speed aspect is he's so skilled at playing the receiver position, setting up the vendors, setting up coverage, his route running, his releases. It's really special the way he's 6'4", 207, but he moves like he's 5'11", 180 pounds. Like it's really unique. And so you factor in the athleticism, the size, the skill, and then his ability at the catch point, I think is what my favorite thing about him. He has that rare ability to slow down the ball at the catch point. And that's something that Larry Fitzgerald would do. And that's why he's my comparison is Larry Fitzgerald. Not many guys, Chris Carter could do that. Not many guys could do it though. He does it. And yeah, he's a bona fide number one the moment he enters the league. And honestly, Malik Nabers, I don't think is too far behind. And
that's, I was going to get to that. What is the gap between Nabers and I would assume Rome Odunze is your third guy for Washington.
Yeah, and I think that's the top tier, but I do think it's close at number one. And that speaks more to Nabers and how good he is. You know, he's young. He doesn't even turn 21 until the summer. He's a guy that you can see the 7-on-7 background with him. His ability to win one-on-one, make catches over defenders downfield, and then after the catch, he is really explosive. So big fan of Malik Nabers. In my opinion, top three players in the draft are Caleb, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers. And so if I'm the Giants, I'm hoping he falls to 6. I even have the conversation about, okay, what would it cost to go up to 5? You know,
Get Nabers.
Right. What does that cost? Because you know what? It might not cost that much. And to make sure you get your guy, it'd be worth it. Now, if they can't work that out, then you still feel pretty good about Rome Odunze there at 6. Big size, speed athlete. He's going to be around 220, and he's still probably going to run in the 4.3s, high 4.3s, low 4.4s. Really good through contact, and that's what really separates him is his ability. It doesn't matter what the coverage is, he will finish, and that concentration, that hand-eye coordination, it really, really impressive with him. So, yeah, you can't go wrong with any of these top three receivers. At the moment they're drafted, I think they're going to instantly be at one of the top, 15 receivers in the league, and it'll be really interesting to see where they go from here.
So, in that situation, you mentioned your comp. Well, how about the comps for Nabers and Odunze?
Let's see. Who did I say for Nabers? He is kind of like a bigger Jordan Addison. Jordan Addison was a rookie last year for the Vikings, but Nabers is bigger than that. But you see the same kind of start stop suddenness with the way he moves. You know, that is something that really separates him, because again, he's a bigger guy, he's a bigger target, but the way he moves, the way he can get open is something that's really special. And then Dunze, who did I say for Dunze? I'll have to check my notes, but okay. he's so unique, because again, he's 6'3", 220, and he's going to run the 4.3s.
Right.
You know, like, it's just, there's not a lot of guys like that. And so, yeah, he's a unique player.
So who is the player in your mind, any position that we know those top six, we've talked about those mm-hmm. top six, then we've talked about McCarthy. Who is the guy that could mess that up? Do you buy into Alt and being that top guy? Is he your top offensive lineman, or is there somebody else that you think could play into that mix?
Alt is, in my opinion, the top offensive lineman in this class. And you know, if you prioritize the offensive line over the receiver, then Alt's certainly worthy of a top seven pick, in my opinion. I mean, he's really had a fascinating, you know, with his background. His dad's a former Pro Bowl offensive tackle with the Chiefs in the early 90s, blocked for Joe Montana. But his dad didn't really want him playing offensive line when he was growing up. He played a lot of skill positions. He played quarterback. Even in high school, he was playing quarterback and tight end. It wasn't until his senior year that he kind of was more of a blocking tight end and played some tackle. And then he goes to Notre Dame, and he's starting left tackle almost from day one. And he's gotten so much better year after year after year. And he's only played 3 years with the Irish. So to see him get so much better in such a short area of time, it's easy to be excited about who he is now, but then also who he's going to be a year from now, 2 years from now. You know, he has probably the best all-around tape of these tackles, pass protection, run blocking. You know, he can do it all. So if Joe Wall, if you want to go offensive line, Joe Wall, I think you feel really comfortable about drafting him in the top seven picks.
Overall, this draft class, you know, any position is, we know we've all talked about the positions that, you know, quarterback and receiver, we've talked offensive line. What group do you think is kind of being overlooked right now in terms of the talent, maybe the depth in this entire draft, all rounds? What would you say to that?
I mean, I do think that it's, you know, we're going to see those premium positions go early with, yeah, quarterback, tackle, receiver. Those guys are going to fly off the board. I do think it's a pretty good year for corners. And, you know, we could see all offense in the top 10, very possible. But who will be that first defensive player drafted? Good chance it's one of these corners, whether it's Terrion Arnold from Alabama. I think Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo is in that mix.
He's blown up lately, huh? For the outside people, I would imagine he's been on your radar for a while.
Coming into the year, he was viewed as more of like a second-round guy. So, you know, because, again, Matt Competition had really good junior tape. But Matt Competition, it's like, okay, I like this guy. Second-round type of player. And then by the time we get to, like, Halloween, I think I came out with my top 50 update, like, right around Halloween. He was, like, 35 in there. And it's like, okay, yeah, he's better than I thought. I mean, he's going higher and higher. And then by the time we get to the end of the season, it's like, yeah, this guy's a first-round pick. I mean, he was 20th overall in my mock draft back in before Christmas, and then goes to the Senior Bowl, crushes it. I mean, he was outstanding. One of the best players there, if not the best. What I love most about Quinyon is, yeah, he's got good size, 6 foot, over 200 pounds, got good length. He's going to run in the 4.3s here at the Combine, so you love the traits. But he is so composed, and there's no panic in his play style. You love that about him. But then the ball skills, elite ball skills. Over the last 2 years at Toledo, he had 46 passes defended. I mean, that's just a remarkable number. And that's one of those stats that will translate to the next level. If you get your hands on the football in college, chances are you're going to be able to do it at the NFL level. So I think Quinyon Mitchell, with what he's done this season at Toledo, at the Senior Bowl, and then what he's going to do this week here at the Combine, he's going to have a chance to cement himself as a top 12 to 15 player.
I got two quick hitters for you, and I'll let you go. Again, this is Dane Brugler. You better check out all his stuff at The Athletic. Well worth the price for a subscription, and especially this time of year with everything that Dane pumps out. Your guy, day two, day three, that is kind of your favorite guy that someone says, hey, this is the guy that, you know, two months into the season, we're going to be talking about him. Do you have anybody that jumps to your
– Oh, yeah. I mean, there's always guys that you can't help but have a soft spot for different reasons. You know, like Austin Booker is really interesting, the pass rusher from Kansas. he's played so little football. He only had like 500 snaps in his career in college because he was a redshirt guy, and then he barely played that next year. And then this past year for Kansas, he was more of a off-the-bench guy, but there's so much ability there. He's long. His athleticism off the edge is impressive. So Austin Booker is one of those players who I think is going to go maybe higher than people think. I mentioned the corners as being a strong position. A guy like Andrew Phillips from Kentucky
right?
Who reminds me a lot of Roger McCreary, who the Titans drafted early second round a couple years ago. Not the biggest guy necessarily, but he's a good athlete. He's competitive. Had a good week at the Senior Bowl. Has good tape. Doesn't have any interceptions in college, and that's kind of like a red flag. But, again, we're talking about probably a early third round pick. And so there's a discount on him. But again, I think he's going to come in and be a nickel from day one. So yeah, those are two players that I know I like maybe a little more than most other people do. A couple of tight ends. Jared Wiley from TCU is one of those guys. Doesn't get enough love. Tanner McLaughlin from Arizona. I think it's not a great tight end group. And, you know, Brock Bowers will go early, obviously, somewhere in the top 20. And then maybe Jatavion Sanders from Texas will be in the top 50 range, 40 to 60. But then after that, I do think it's a pretty good tight end group with Jared Wiley and Tanner McLaughlin, Cade Stover. A lot of really quality tight ends in that third to fourth round mix.
You mentioned, Nickel, before I ask you the final question, Max Melton from Rutgers. Mm-hmm. I know he had a pretty good week at the Senior Bowl. Where does he slot in? What do you think of his future?
I don't know that he's going to go top 100, but I think once you get to day three, I think he'll be like one of those guys that like, oh, he's still here. Okay, we feel good about, you know, when teams, they go home after Friday night, reset their board, and they're looking at their board and like, oh, Max Melton, he's one of the better players that's still available. So, yeah, I mean, maybe he sneaks into the top 100. I hope he does. It'd be great for him. But I think better chance he probably goes early somewhere in that day three, fourth round, fifth round range.
What do you like about his game?
I mean, he's a good athlete. He's competitive. I mean, throwing the Ohio State tape and watch him compete his butt off. It didn't feel like that moment was too big for him with the way he played. So, and obviously, you know, he's got the family connections. You know, he knows what to expect. When you talk about a corner position, you want athletes and you want competitors. He checks both those boxes. And so give me athletes, give me competitors at that position. And I feel good about what my coaching is going to be able to do with him and what he's going to be able to do once you, because corner is kind of a sink or swim position when you put him out there. But if I know he's an athlete, I know he's going to compete his butt off. I feel good about him swimming more than sinking.
All right. You're Joe Shane. You're sitting at 6.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, I mean, I think I examine what the trade opportunities are. What would it cost me to go up? What was it going to cost me to move down? I figure all that out. So I'm not surprised on draft day when, you know, all this moving happens. Let's just say I have to stay at 6. I'm getting one of these receivers. You know, I'm getting a true X receiver. And, you know, I don't feel great about my quarterback position necessarily, but I feel good knowing I got a true X that going to help my quarterback situation now and then in the future, whether that is moving up one spot from Malik Nabers or staying and picking Roma Dunze. Either way, I know I can feel confident about my first round pick being someone that's going to help my offense from day one.
Dane Brugler, there you go. Giants fans, check him out on The Athletic. You will not be disappointed. All right, and there you have it, all from Dane. You know, there's a reason why his draft guide is the beast. He's just full of information, and like I made the point, he does not pick up his draft work in February. His draft work starts at the end of the 2024 draft, and I'm sure he's already starting on the 2025 draft, and goes all the way through. So he's not one of those Johnny-come-lately at the combine, let's start talking about the draft, like us beat guys who have to focus in on the NFL during the season. He is 24/7, all in, if you will, on the draft. So I hope you enjoyed all the information from Dane. And now we go from Dane to Shane. Joe Shane met the media first. And give you a little scene setter. Joe Shane was bouncing all around, and a lot of the executives do this time of year, especially on Tuesday, because other than formal interviews with the prospects, the teams don't have anything on the field until Thursday. And like I said yesterday, as you saw on the graphic that our producer Paul put together, The on-the-field workouts start Thursday. The media interviews with the prospects start Wednesday. The team interviews with the players have already begun, and they come in position by position group on a given day. Monday was the defensive line and linebackers, and then they trickle on through, and you'll have D lineman, edge, and linebacker on Wednesday media interviews. Thursday are DBs and tight ends. Friday media interviews are the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the running backs. And then Saturday is the offensive line. Sunday, I believe there's special teamers that are involved, but that's really never a deep group here at the combine. So we have that, and then we go one extra day for the teams and the on-field workouts, and that's the way that works. So Joe Shane was bouncing around. He was on Sirius XM NFL Radio earlier this morning. Then he went to CBS Sports. Then he was on with Chris Sims on NBC Sports. So he's all over the place. And then he gets to the media, and we talk about what's going on from a big picture point of view. And then after about 10 minutes or so at the podium, then Shane meets with the beat writers off to the side, and we get another 10 to 12 minutes with Joe Shane talking about the Giants. So let's see. We're going to run down some topics. I'm going to give you my thoughts. You can check out all of our coverage at northjersey.com and in the print editions of The Record. So the biggest thing with Joe Shane at this point, topic number one for me is the quarterbacks. Would you draft a quarterback? Now, I talked about this on social media, wrote a story about it. Everybody starts freaking out. Joe Shane says, I have faith in Daniel Jones. And it's, oh, they're not going to pick a quarterback. Oh, I can't believe it. The Giants are a waste. Shane and Dable are going to put their jobs on the line. It's over. That's the overreaction. The reality is, what is Joe Shane going to say publicly about Daniel Jones that is not going to really backfire for what the Giants have to deal with? They're going to keep the door open to draft a quarterback at six. They're going to explore opportunities if they can move up, if they have a quarterback through their evaluation that they believe will get them to a place that they don't think Daniel Jones can get them to. And here's the thing. Why would Joe Shane go away from that answer? A year ago, Joe Shane and the Giants signed Daniel Jones to a contract that is going to pay him $82 million guaranteed. Now, while it seems very unlikely that he sees the full 4 years of that contract, that's where it stands. What good does it do Joe Shane and the Giants to come out here today and slam Daniel Jones and buy into the negativity around Daniel Jones? All you need the Giants to do is to be honest behind the scenes. As I wrote in my story on Tuesday on NorthJersey.com regarding the quarterbacks and kind of laying out everything, Joe Shane will have the green light to take a quarterback at six or anywhere higher if they believe that that quarterback will get them higher in their aspirations than Daniel Jones will. Point, period. You can talk all you want about John Mara and, oh, John Mara is never going to let Joe Shane draft a quarterback. He loves Daniel Jones too much. Remember, John Mara was the owner and the co-owner and the team president who allowed Ben McAdoo to bench Eli Manning and put Geno Smith as the quarterback. So you want to go back and forth, and we play this game about meddling, not meddling. John Mara, when fans want him to interfere and stop things from happening, like the Eli Manning situation, which he should have. He should have dealt with that himself and talked to Eli going all the way back to that situation. But the reality is you can't want someone to meddle sometimes, and then other times you want him to stay out of it. He's the owner of the team. He's involved in the day-to-day operations of the Giants. But when it comes to Joe Shane and Brian Dable, John Mara does not control what's going on, does not make Joe Shane or Brian Dable do anything. So this idea that Joe Shane and Brian Dable bought into Daniel Jones because John Mara wanted them to, it's It's not true. If that's a mistake and that's how you see it, Joe Shane made the mistake. Brian Daboll made the mistake. They have to answer for it. This was not John Mara shoving it down their throats. So that's number one. And number two, if they come to an agreement about a quarterback that they believe is better than Daniel Jones, and we could say all you want, I know you're listening right now, and you're going to say, Art, every quarterback out there is better than Daniel Jones. Just stop. Let's take the emotion out of it for a second. There are quarterbacks, like Dane Brugler said, that might need a year of seasoning. Look, Patrick Mahomes needed a year. Alex Smith started. Could the Giants be, ironically, on the Kansas City plan the way Dave Gettleman so effusively talked about back when, you know, with Eli Manning and getting a quarterback, and they tried doing that with Eli Manning and Daniel Jones, and Daniel Jones two games in all of a sudden was starting. So there's a lot to go through on this process. But for a quarterback, do not allow the overreaction to take you away from the main point. The Giants will consider a quarterback. They will seriously consider it. But as Dane and I talked about, you don't know how the top six is going to play out. If you like a quarterback, you go get him. I've said this all along, you go get him. And do you have buyer's remorse if you trade up and that quarterback doesn't pan out? The reality is you're going to have buyer's remorse if that quarterback doesn't pan out regardless of what you do. Whether you sit at six or you go up to three, there will always be assets that you have to give up in some way, shape, or form. So from what I take, the first takeaway from Joe Shane, they are still going to explore quarterbacks. They are considering quarterbacks. Shane will have a green light. What I was told and I've reported, and I'll tell you this again, the Giants will meet with all the quarterbacks. They're going to meet with Caleb Williams. They're going to meet with J.J. McCarthy. They're going to meet with Drake May. They are going to meet with Jaden Daniels at the Senior Bowl in Alabama, in Mobile. They met with Bo Nix. They met with Michael Penix Jr. They met with the quarterbacks there. So the Giants are exploring everything they could possibly explore as to whether or not they are going to go for a quarterback. Let's go to the Saquon question now. Joe Shane, I thought, revealed a little bit of his hope and his optimism with Saquon. And the thing that stuck out to me was the idea that he thinks both Saquon and Joe Shane and everyone involved has grown a little bit since their experience last year. I can tell you this for a fact. The Giants believe that they would have had a long-term deal with Saquon at their price if Saquon was represented by Ed Berry of CAA right now. And that's where he's represented. But last year, he went through agents. He had an issue with the agent. He felt as though Kim Mialy, who was his agent last year since the draft, the negotiations were not going well. And from people I've talked to, the idea is that if Berry was involved, they may have gotten a deal done last year. They didn't. And Shane talked today about stretching and stretching and stretching, and they still couldn't get to that point. What happens a year later? Well, Shane also talked about the salary cap that's now at $255 million, that the $30 million or so that was pumped in that teams didn't anticipate, now maybe they do consider a franchise tag for Saquon Barkley. I don't think they're franchising Saquon Barkley. I've told you that. I was told very unlikely last week before the number came in. Now, why would Joe Shane keep that door open? Well, it's a negotiating tactic. It's a tool he can use in negotiation. When he sits down later this week with Ed Berry and talks about Saquon Barkley, he could say, look, Ed, we may use the franchise tag on Saquon, again, at $12 million. It's a $2 million raise from what Saquon made last year. Does he deserve a raise? Well, did he deserve more money last year? I think the price point for the Giants, I think they're looking at $8, $9 million for Saquon. Now, they may give him guaranteed, but I think that's what they're looking at. The reality is Saquon wants more than that. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you what Saquon wants. But I don't believe that Saquon is going to feel appreciated if he's getting $8 or $9 million a year. Now, it comes down to the guarantees. Here's what I think is going to happen. I told you this on yesterday's show. I think the Giants will meet with Saquon. They'll talk numbers. When the deadline comes March 5th on Tuesday, they will decide not to use the franchise tag on Saquon. They'll let him hit the market. I think it will be the understanding that, look, we won't tag you, but come back to us with your number and let us see where we're at in free agency. It's a good faith, sign of good faith. We won't tag you, but come back to us and give us an opportunity to see where we're at when you get your number in free agency after the negotiating period that starts on March 11th. And then ultimately, the Giants will have to make a decision, and Saquon will have to make a decision. And I think the Giants will gamble that the market value of Saquon will not be where he expects it to be. And that their offer to stay here, to be here, will be the best offer. Now, I can't tell you that's going to be the case. I can't tell you that. Do I see a team that could come out and give Saquon a better deal financially, more guaranteed money? Sure, all it takes is one. The Houston Texans, maybe the Baltimore Ravens. I've mentioned the Dallas Cowboys and Philadelphia Eagles. I have Eagles fans hit me up all over on social media. The Eagles don't pay for running backs. The Eagles don't pay for running backs. Well, guess what? If Saquon Barkley hits the market and they look like they think that with $12 or $13 million that they can get Saquon Barkley away from the Giants and completely weaken the Giants' offense in their eyes, if Saquon Barkley is the only player on the Giants that they fear on offense, and Howie Roseman looks at it and goes, you know what, for $12 or $13 million, we'll throw in a couple void years, and away we go. And could I see the Eagles doing something like that? Sure. Could the Cowboys do something like that? Absolutely. Now, I've seen this idea. This is not saying that teams value your players more than you do. But sometimes that happens. Think back to the Nate Solder mistake. Why did the Patriots let him go? The Patriots wanted him back, but they didn't want him for the contract that the Giants gave him. You know, there are Giants free agents that are going to hit the market that are going to get better teams from better deals from other teams. So that's where the Saquon situation is. It's not over. There's still a chance that he's back with the Giants. There's still a chance that he hits the market and goes elsewhere. It's going to be a very interesting 2 weeks, and then we'll see where free agency stands. So we've hit the Daniel Jones situation. We've hit the Saquon Barkley situation. Xavier McKinney, they have not talked. Dave Mulligetta, his agent, gets into town Friday, according to Joe Shane. That's when Shane and Mulligetta will get together and start talking numbers. They have not begun contract negotiations with Xavier McKinney. So whatever the perception is out there, they haven't gone there yet. So you would expect Mulligetta to want Xavier to get top dollar on the market. How high will the Giants go? I don't think they're paying him $16 or $17 million a year, but could they find a sweet spot that Xavier comes back? He's a 24-year-old captain who played every defensive snap last year. Some good, a lot bad, some bad, a lot really good down the stretch. It's now a different defense. Shane Bowen, and we'll get to that. Joe Shane, we asked him about how different will it be bringing players in for Shane Bowen than Wink Martindale. He said, well, schematically, they're not going to blitz as much as Wink, but nobody blitzes as much as Wink. And I've told you that. Doesn't mean that Shane Bowen is not going to blitz. What else are we going to see differently? I think Shane Bowen, as Joe Shane said, is going to rely on his defensive front to get after the quarterback. He's not going to rely on blitzes to create pressure. He's going to set his defensive front free, and they're going to go after the quarterback. That's good news for Kayvon Thibodeau. I think Thibodeau has an opportunity now to really show what he's worth going into year three. And I think Bowen will look to take advantage of that. And I think that also puts a premium on finding another edge, a compliment to Kayvon Thibodeau. Who will you go out and get? Will you go and get a veteran like a Danico Autry who played with Shane Bowen in Tennessee? Maybe he's on a little bit of, you know, I think he's 31 or 32. Maybe he's on the back end of his career. Maybe you're not going to go that route. Maybe you make a play for Bryce Huff with the Jets and make a big money splash trying to bring Huff here. If you believe in his pass rush rate, which is outstanding, anytime you can take a guy from a rival, at least an in-town rival, I'm sure the Giants would love to do that as well. You know, the Jets love to do it the reverse. So another point about Bowen is that he's had good safeties, and Shane made a point. Malik Hooker and Kevin Byard, really, they made a living of having two very good safeties. They both got second contracts with the Titans. So does that bode well for Xavier McKinney? I'd say the Giants would be competitive with McKinney. Now, if somebody comes in and blows him out of the water, I think, you know, the Giants will seriously have to consider letting him walk and going elsewhere on the market. But that's kind of what I got out. But there's still a lot to be determined when it comes to McKinney and where he stands. Let's see. We hit that. Evan Neal recuperating, recovering in the building often in his rehab. Joe Shane did let it slip. We didn't go into Neal too much, but mentioned right tackle is Evan Neal. So I think what the Giants will end up doing is they'll end up signing someone for the interior. They'll end up signing someone that could actually be a swing tackle and step in for Evan Neal if Evan Neal does not play well out of the gates. But I think Neal is going to get another opportunity to win that job. But I do think he's going to be pushed. So that's why Mike Nwanu from the Patriots has guard, tackle, flex. I think they'll make a bid to sign him to play right guard. I think they'll look into a couple swing tackle opportunities. And I think it's Jermaine Illuminaire is how you pronounce his name. I should have checked it sooner. He was with the Raiders. Obviously, Carmen Brasillo here now as the Giants offensive line coach. I could see him being a guy that they sign to come in and play swing tackle and maybe challenge Evan Neal as well. So see how that goes from here. So let's see. What else? Trying to think of what else that Joe Shane talked about that I wanted to hit. Looking at stuff on the phone to see if I have any updates here of what else we talked about with Joe Shane. Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about. The idea, and it was in the Daily News that reported it first at the end of the season with the whole Wink, Dable back and forth, that Joe Shane was on the headsets for four games late in the year, beginning with the Washington game. Shane discussed it today on the record, talked about why he did it. And he said he's always been curious to go on the headsets and hear the communication and, you know, not being involved, but just listening and hearing the coaches and how they interact and how that goes on. Now, do you take that at face value? I'm sure there was a little intrigue from Joe Shane wanting to make sure that things were going well. But let's not forget, that was also the day that the story came out that it was Jay Glazer's first report in Washington that Dable and Wink were not getting along. So you take that for what it is. But Shane said that last year when they played on Sunday night in Washington, they do not have a great vantage point. So he felt as though he wanted to be in the mix and kind of get a different perspective. Now, Shane being superstitious, he didn't even go the little superstitious route, the office Eli Manning, I'm a little superstitious, little stitious. Shane said it was part superstition. They won that game in Washington, so that's why he went back on the headsets the next week. They won again, and then they won for a third time. They beat the Patriots, then they went on the bye week, then they came back and beat the Packers on Monday night. And Shane said that he stayed that way because he was superstitious. You're going to believe what you want to believe. I'm sure that part of it was doing his job as general manager and making sure that his coaches were getting along, wanting to back his head coach a little bit and making sure that the communication between head coach and his coordinators and the assistants were working. Remember, the Giants were 2-8 at some point. I like the fact that they took control. Dable took control on offense, wanted to know what was going on in the defensive meetings. Shane being involved the way he is, I mean, look, we know the cycle the Giants have been in. The cycle is a bad one. They were firing coaches left and right. Every 2 years, a head coach was out. The general manager was here, not getting along with the head coach. I'm sure Joe Shane has heard these stories, and it was up to him to kind of take control a little bit, making sure that things were working well under him. It was up to Brian Daboll to take control and making sure things are under him. And that's the way it pans out. Now, I'll leave you with this because we get set tomorrow for the prospects. I'll be checking out a local guy from Notre Dame. Was at Ohio State. Javonte Jean-Baptiste. It's from Bergen Catholic. He's an edge player. Reminds me a little bit of Justin Tuck back in the day. I think he could be an early day two, day three, a late day two, early day three pick. Could be in the mix for the Giants. We'll have him right off the bat tomorrow on Wednesday. So I'll talk a little bit about him. I'll have a feature on him on NorthJersey.com and in the print editions of the Record. But I'll leave you with this, that Shane talked about the evolution, the idea, you know, that did he have a problem with Brian Daboll and his leadership style? And, you know, Shane said, look, you know, we all need to make adjustments going into year three. We all need to evolve. We all need to take a look at ourselves and say, how can we be better? How can we be better leaders, be better communicators? So I think you're going to get that as a theme from the Giants all along. You'll get that next month, I think, when Brian Daboll meets with us at the owners' meetings in Orlando. I think that's kind of how the Giants are going to spin this forward. And to me, I think that's the only way you can move forward, is that if you think that you're a finished product, and I say that all the time, I am not a finished product as a reporter. I'm not a finished product as a podcast host, as a father, as a husband, however you want to talk about it. There's always room for improvement. It's not a cliche. It's reality. And once you think that, once your ego has gotten to the point where you think you are done, you're finished. And in this league especially, if you think you're done, it's over. And I don't think it's over yet for Brian Daboll and Joe Shane and where they are heading into year three. So appreciate you being all in. Again, thanks to Dane Brugler of The Athletic. Thanks to the Giants for allowing us to use their kind of radio row spot for our interview with Dane earlier today out at the convention center. And appreciate Paul Wood, our producer, and all the work he's putting in. Hope you guys are enjoying the video. Drop me a line. Stapleton@NorthJersey.com. Reach me on private message on Twitter/X. Let me know what you think of the videos that we're putting together here. Do you like it? Do you stick to the audio of the podcast? Let us know. We're watching the numbers. They keep going up. We appreciate the support. We appreciate you being all in. We'll talk to you from Indianapolis on Wednesday.